When we look at the other export-oriented schemes, there are many schemes which have been introduced. Originally, they were introduced for manufacturer exporters. Initially, in the starting stages, it was known as 100% EOU scheme. That means that all goods which were manufactured by that manufacturer in that particular factory using those scheme benefits, they were required to be exported 100%. Subsequently, it was found that a certain level of wastage occurs, certain level of defective production occurred, and therefore 100% could not be exported. So now it is requirement is 75% of the goods manufactured over there has got to be re-exported. And then there are different schemes available. Previously there was only one export-oriented unit, 100% export-oriented unit. But now it is dependent on the type of the export product. Various export promotion schemes have come about. One, export processing zone scheme, free trade zone schemes from where goods are imported and exported without payment of duty. Then export-oriented unit scheme for any product. But for electronic hardware, there's a special scheme of electronic hardware technology park scheme. That means goods produced only in those particular electronic hardware parks. Then there is a software technology park scheme, goods exported only from those software technology parks. There is a biotechnology park scheme, goods being exported from biotechnology park only. These are all standard scheme under the export-oriented unit scheme or EOU scheme. As far as these schemes are concerned, they are set up by manufacturers who undertake to export their entire production of goods and services, including repair, remaking, reconditioning, reengineering, rendering of services, etc., etc. By entire, again I repeat, 75%. Rejects and wastages could be sold in the local market after payment of GST. Software technology parks are export-oriented projects catering to the need of software development for exports. Electronic hardware technology parks have been developed for encouraging exports of electronic hardware items, which include hardware disk drive, computers, televisions, etc. And biotechnology parks are export-oriented projects catering to the needs of biotechnology development for exports. Let us look at the regulatory requirements of the EOU. The export-oriented units have to obtain a letter of permission or letter of intent or industrial license as per requirement, which has to be issued by the jurisdictional development commissioners. Now, all export-oriented units, they are under the control of a single development commissioner. And that development commissioner has got the powers of industrial license, has got the powers of customs department, have got the powers under DGFT, have got the powers under GST. So all powers of these four respective agencies are clubbed together and granted to such a development commissioner under whose jurisdiction any export-oriented unit is covered. Of course, the premises are licensed as per customs bonded warehouse under the warehousing provisions of the Customs Act. Units are licensed and governed by manufacturer and other operations in warehouse regulations. Units have to execute a bond with surety or security covering duty foregone on the imported goods. I have explained these procedures previously. They have also to be registered under CGSTIN for Central Integrated Tax. And of course, the units have to account for dutiable goods procured without payment of duty for export of goods or disposal thereof. That means any wastage which occurs over there, if they are being disposed of, then GST has got to be recovered by a tax invoice, even for sending out those wastages as far as those units are concerned. They are all under the control of the Development Commissioner. Now, as far as the benefits are concerned, let us look at the benefits for these EOU schemes. These units are allowed to import without payment of duty all capital goods, all raw material, all components, all packing materials, all consumables, spares, etc., which are required for export production only. Mind you, this is the primary subjective clause. The premises of the units are approved as a custom bonded warehouse under the warehousing provisions of the Customs Act. The units are also required to be registered with the jurisdictional GST office and obtain a GSTIN number, because there can be duty-free requirement of local component, domestic components also, where normally GSTN has got to be paid and they can claim a reverse entry. All manufacturing and operations are carried out under the customs bond and the unit bearing appropriate charges for officers on cost recovery basis as per the regulations. That means the unit holders have got to pay charges for customs officers who are stationed at their units. The units are also required to execute a multi-purpose bond with surety or security with the jurisdictional customs or CGST officers. If you look at the clearance procedures for these EOUs, the units are allowed to import without payment of duty all types of goods required for export production. They may also procure goods or services from domestic tariff area, that is from Indian manufacturers, or from bonded warehouses in domestic tariff area. Such export-oriented units are eligible for a fast-track clearance of import cargo through the customs on the strength of a procurement certificate issued by the Development Commissioner. What happens over here? The cargo is not examined at the gateway port or airport at all. And in case of loose cargo, marks and numbers on the package are verified. That's all. And goods are allowed to be moved to the export-oriented unit. The container is allowed to be moved directly to the EOU after applying of the RFID-based one-time lock sealed with the seal number and date and time applied on the transport document. The OTL seal number and container number are verified with the bill of entry, and if it is found intact, the clearance of the container is allowed directly to the EOU. And all such cargo which has been cleared on this basis and brought into the unit's premises are examined by GST officers or customs officials who are stationed at that particular unit. After examination of the goods, they are allowed to be used for export production. And then a re-warehousing certificate is to be submitted online through the ICS to the point of import. That means goods have arrived at this warehouse, which is a custom bonded warehouse. So this custom bonded warehouse will issue a re-warehousing certificate to the point of import, gateway port or airport. On the export side, the units are allowed the facility of RFID-based self-sealing one-time lock of their export containers and moved directly to the docks or ICDs or CFS. No interdiction by the customs officers, direct movement if the RFID OTL seal is intact and marked on the document matches with the container details and the documents. When we look at free trade zones and export processing zones, there is a small difference under the EOU scheme. The free trade zone or export processing zones are places where the infrastructure units are created by either the central government or the state government, not private parties. But they are used and allowed under the export-oriented scheme. The FTZ and EPZ have actually emerged as an effective instrument to boost export of manufactured products. Export and import policy provisions for free trade zone and export processing zone are same as applicable to export-oriented units. Everything same as I've explained to you before. And each such zone provides the basic infrastructure facilities like standard design factory buildings, built-up sheds, roads, power supply, and drainage system. It's just like, you know, industrial parks or industrial estates created by the state governments. But such industrial estates are not for general goods, but they are licensed by the Customs Department, and then only they can act as free trade zones or export processing zones. A whole range of fiscal incentives by way of customs duty, CGST, and income tax exemptions are available to such zones also, and the units which are established in the zones. Custom clearance facilities are also offered within the zone at no extra cost. In EOU's cost recovery basis were there. Here, there is no extra cost. There is a special bonded warehouse scheme for gem and jewelry exports. The gem and jewelry sector is the one of the biggest export-oriented sector where all the goods are very high value goods, and therefore there is a special bonded warehouse scheme applicable. And under such scheme, this provides for setting up of public or private bonded warehouse as per the warehousing license regulations for import and re-export of cut and polished diamonds, cut and polished colored gemstones, uncut and unset precious and semi-precious stones, wherein import goods would be kept by the license holder. Warehouse license holder shall be responsible for safekeeping of the goods. Mind you, these provisions are available only to actual exporters of gem and jewelry only, and not to any importer exporter. They have got to be registered with the Gem and Jewelry Export Promotion Council also. And their warehouse license holder will be responsible for safekeeping of the goods, for making physical delivery thereof to the users against duty assessed bills of entry on which ex-bond clearance has been allowed by the Customs Department, and for rendering to Customs a complete account of goods received and kept by them in the bond. Why? Because when the goods are arriving over there, they are duty-free. Once they are given to the gem and jewelry exporters or for local sale, then the respective schemes of either re-export or local sale under CGST would be made applicable. Clearance from the bonded warehouse may be taken by export-oriented unit schemes units as per the available procedure, and clearance from bonded warehouse may be taken by units in special economic zones in accordance with the SEZ Act. Mind you, SEZ Act is slightly different because SEZ is not a local area. It is termed to be a foreign area within the country. The gem and jewelry representative authorizations can take the goods by following the procedures. That is, those who are registered with the Gem and Jewelry Export Promotion Council, they get a special REP authorization. In their capacity as bonders, they will also maintain the prescribed records, including name, address, and other specified details of the users and quantity of the goods released to the user and exported by him. They have got to maintain both the accounts. For domestic users, what recovery they have done in the form of CGST, and for exporters, what is the proof of export. These records are required to be kept by them. Consignments, export of jewelry, including branded jewelries for display and sale in the permanent shops or showroom set up abroad, is also permitted under special provisions for gem and jewelry use. These are all special provisions allowed for gem and jewelry exporters. Such exporters are also permitted personal carriage of gold, silver, platinum jewelry, or precious or semi-precious stones or beads and articles as samples with them when they go out on a foreign tour, up to a value of $1,00,000. As I told you, subjective condition, they are registered with Gem and Jewelry Export Promotion Council. They have got to show that they are having units in such bonded warehouses. And it's only for export promotion tours, temporary display or sale abroad. If they are only displaying, they have got to show proof that they are bringing it back. And if there is a sale abroad, they have to show that foreign inward remittance has come to their account. That is a proof which is required to be given by such gem and jewelry exporters. This is subject to condition that the exporter remits the sale proceeds. And this has got to be through the normal banking channel, that is AD code having category 1 banks. Jewelry items not sold abroad has got to be brought back, or they shall be re-imported into India within a stipulated period. When we look manufacturing operations in custom bonded warehouse, as far as export-oriented units are concerned, all manufacturing and other operations are carried out under custom bond, under the export-oriented scheme, by exporters with certain minimum value addition in terms of export earnings. Now, this value addition, at the initial stages, it was termed to be as minimum 33% addition. Subsequently, subsequent finance bills at the time of Finance Act is concerned, this value was changed. Sometimes it was brought down to 15%. For certain products, it was increased. And therefore, it has got to be referred. Every year, changes would occur on this issue. Units are allowed to import without payment of duty all capital goods, raw materials, components, packing materials, spares, consumables, and equipments which are required for export production. And EOUs are required to execute a multi-purpose bond with surety security with the jurisdictional customs CGST officers stationed at that unit. And the units are required to register and comply with manufacture and other operations in warehouse. Number 2 amendment has come about in 2020. They've got to comply with this new regulation. As per the new regulations, the EOU units have to apply for permission to operate under Section 65 of the Act in a warehouse, under Private Warehouse License Regulation 2016. He has got to give an undertaking, number 1, to maintain accounts of receipt and removal of goods in digital format, in such format as may be specified, and furnish the same to the bond officer on a monthly basis, digitally through the electronic mode through ICES itself. Then execute a bond in such format as are specified as per the regulation. Inform the input-output norms as per the standard SION wherever considered necessary for raw materials and the final products, and to inform the revised input-output norms in case of any change in their manufacturing activities. The principal commissioner or commissioner of customs, after due verification of an application, may grant permission to them to operate as EOUs. Permission granted is subject to the following condition under this manufacturing and custom bonded warehouse scheme. Conditions are somewhat similar to what I have explained to you previously also, that he has got to appoint a warehouse keeper who has got sufficient experience in warehousing operations and custom procedures. He shall have other facilities, equipments, and personnel which are sufficient to control access to the warehouse, provide secure storage of the goods, and to ensure full compliance. And the warehouse keeper shall ensure that all dutiable goods are stored in a strong room or removed from there only in the presence of a customs officer. Means of transportation of the goods shall be securely sealed with a one-time lock, OTL, RFID-based OTL. Same procedures is continuation in this custom-bonded manufacturing regulation also. He has got to receive and permit unloading of all goods in the presence of the customs officer. Same, he shall transfer, remove for home consumption or export any goods with the permission and in the presence of the custom officer who is stationed over there, who has got jurisdiction over his unit. He shall maintain detailed records in receipt, handling, storing, removal of goods into or from one warehouse to the other warehouse. He has got to keep records of all activities immediately on a day-to-day basis and store the data electronically for a period of at least 5 years. He shall ensure that the electronic as well as manual records, like hard copies of certain documents wherever required, are kept updated, accurate and complete and made available at the warehouse to the custom officer for verification. These are the same process as per the previous regulations which I have explained to you. As far as common bond is concerned, all export promotion schemes can now have a common bond if an exporter is availing of different export promotion scheme benefits. He can file a single bond with DGFT and also with the customs. The authorization holder can execute a common bond, importer-exporter code-wise, for all export imports under the export promotion schemes. Any export promotion schemes. He shall execute the bond with bank guarantee or surety at the time of registration of the first authorization for imports through specified ports only. He should also indicate the unique number and the location where the common bond was registered in all the bills of entry, shipping bills, etc. That means the bond can be registered at any regional authority level of DGFT. DGFT is having so many regional branches, etc. But he has got to mention the region where he has registered the bond in all his documents. Once such a common bond has been executed and the authorization registered against it, the imports against such authorization shall be permitted as per the time limits prescribed in the concerned export promotion schemes only. As far as bank guarantees are concerned, bank guarantees for all export promotion schemes, the bank guarantee is not required for following units, provided there are no cases of penalization, duty evasion, misdeclaration, etc. during the previous 3 financial years. Who are the entities where bank guarantee is not required? If total turnover of the unit is 5 crores or more per year, if it is a public sector undertaking, that is either state government owned or central government owned. All types of star trading houses, 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-5-star trading houses, and a GST registered manufacturer having paid rupees 1 crore duty, that is GST duty, in the preceding financial year, he is not required to execute a bank guarantee for any of the EP schemes. Manufacturer exporters not covered as above schemes will be required to give a bank guarantee equivalent to 25% of differential duty. And all others, not being manufacturer exporters, all other cases, bank guarantee requirement would be for 100% of differential duty. Now, let us look at these special economic zones. What is a special economic zone? Special economic zones are located within a country's national borders. Mind you, these special economic zones are not only in India, but in other countries of the world also. In these zones, the business and trade have laws that differ from the rest of the countries. That means there are laws and rules and regulations which are applicable to the local manufacturers, importers, exporters, including banking facilities, will not be applicable to units in SEZs. Why? Because the SEZ is treated as a foreign territory. And the aim of the zones include increased trade, increased investment, job creation, and of course, effective administration. That means the businessman who obtains a unit in an SEZ will not have to bother his head for compliance with the local laws. No local laws applicable. To encourage business to set up in the zone, liberal policies have been introduced. These policies are typically regarding investment, taxation, trading quotas, customs and labor regulations. Additionally, companies are also offered tax holidays for a minimum number of years, depending on the type of unit who are registered over there. As far as the clearance procedure is concerned for import purposes, a SEZ unit may import all goods under the ITC harmonized system except prohibited items without payment of duties and taxes. And these would include all capital goods, including new or second-hand, raw materials, semi-finished goods, including semi-finished jewelry also, components, consumables, spare goods and materials for making capital goods required for authorized operations within that SEZ area only. Goods and services can also be procured from other units in the same or other SEZ. That means one SEZ to another SEZ, goods and services can be procured without payment of duties and without following the procedures, or from export-oriented units or software technology parks or electronic hydro parks or biotechnology park units, because they are all duty-free units. A SEZ unit can also procure goods or services from the domestic tariff area. That means local manufacturers can supply goods to the SEZ unit also. And any goods and services entering the SEZ from a local supplier, that is from a DTA or a domestic tariff area, they are all treated as export. That means a manufacturer, any other manufacturer, local manufacturer in India, if he supplies any goods to a unit in the SEZ, it is treated as export. And the DTA supplier of goods services to the SEZ unit is entitled to avail of all export benefits, export entitlements. And of course, movement of goods from place of manufacture to the SEZ is to be on the basis of tax invoice under GSTIN in case where export entitlements are not availed, and on the basis of tax invoice under GSTIN and bill of export in case where export entitlements are availed. So both these options are available. As far as actual exports are concerned, the SEZ unit may export goods or services as per the terms and conditions of letter of approval, except prohibited items under the ITC harmonized system. The SEZ unit may also export byproducts, rejects, waste, scrap arising out of the manufacturing process. The SEZ unit may also subcontract a part of its production or any production process to a unit in domestic tariff area or another SEZ or export-oriented unit or EHTP or STP or BTP, etc., with prior permission of the specified officer, which is to be given on an annual basis. And the SEZ unit may also, on the basis of their annual permission from the specified officer, undertake subcontracting for export on behalf of a domestic tariff area exporter. Now, any local exporter can perform some of their functions through the SEZ unit. As far as sale is concerned to the domestic tariff area, that means from the SEZ, they can sell goods to local persons, including consumers. Here, a unit may sell goods and or services, including rejects, waste, scrap, remnants, broken diamonds, byproducts, anything arising during the manufacturing process or in connection thereat. In the domestic tariff area, on payment of applicable customs duty, and it basically means that when the SEZ unit is selling the goods to a domestic tariff area, it is termed as an import into the India, and so all import procedures would be applicable over here. That is, valuation of the goods and or services cleared into the domestic tariff area from SEZ will be as per Section 14 of the Customs Act, and all valuation rules as applicable to goods when imported into India. That means it is treated as import into India from a foreign country. Why? Because SEZ is a foreign territory. If goods procured in the domestic tariff area by an SEZ units are supplied back to the domestic tariff area as it is, or without substantial processing, such goods shall be treated as re-imported goods. That means if goods have been procured from local manufacturer into the SEZ and the SEZ supplies it back to the local manufacturer, it is treated as re-imported goods under Section 20 as far as the local manufacturer is concerned. The primary requirement is foreign exchange earnings as far as all SEZs are concerned. And here, all SEZ units have to compulsorily show a surplus of net foreign exchange earning. Now, what is the meaning of net foreign exchange earning? That means all goods imported into SEZs will give certain foreign exchange to the foreign supplier, and all goods exported from the SEZ will get foreign exchange from the buyer. Between the outgo and incoming of foreign exchange, there has got to be a net earning increase in foreign exchange. That means if $1 lakh worth of goods were imported and $1 lakh has gone out, as far as exports are concerned, the units have to show that it has earned more than $1 lakh. That is a primary condition as far as the SEZ is concerned. What is the percentage increase? That depends on time factor being granted to the respective units on a timely basis. And SEZ unit shall achieve net positive net foreign exchange earning, which is actually calculated for a cumulative period of 5 years from the date of commencement of production. Maybe first year onwards, second year onwards, there has not been a net earning. There is more of outgo. But cumulative initial production capacity, initial registration period onwards, 5 year period calculation will be taken into consideration. The outgo of foreign exchange during 5 years and incoming foreign exchange during these 5 years have got to show a positive earning cycle at the end of this 5 year period. That is a primary requirement of all SEZ special economic zones. Thank you. Well, exporters, are you satisfied? Yes, I got a lot of benefits. Thank you.